Welcome to Arizona Laughs and Listings, the podcast where fun and funny folks get together and talk about real estate and comedy, two completely unrelated topics that go surprisingly well together. I'm your host, Kristen LeVanway, a real estate agent here in the Phoenix metro area for 19 years, as well as a local stand-up comedian. Today, I'm chatting with Saskia B., human comedian. She's smart, she's funny, she's sassy. She's an experienced home buyer and seller and a thrift store art collector. I am so excited to have you joining me today, Saskia.
Woo. Me too. Hi, Kristen. It's always a pleasure. You know, you're my favorite realtor I've ever had.
Oh, I appreciate that. I appreciate that so much. Yes. And you are in my definite top 10 of clients, you and Eric. So it's a mutual admiration society here right now.
I love
sure.
it.
It was a fun project working with you. But we are here to talk about bigger and better things because I'm amazed at how well these two topics go together, comedy and real estate. So
Right. That's
what we're all about here. So let's start off with who is Saskia? What's the deal? Like, what do people want to know about you?
I don't know what they want to know. I think the number one question is, where did the name come from, Saskia? And I have a joke about it, and I won't tell it on your podcast because I don't know who if this is a family program. But the long story short is it's a Dutch name. It does not have any bearing on, like, it's not a family name, and I am, no, in fact, not a Dutch person.
You're not. I actually am Dutch. But I have a regular name. I don't have a Dutch first name. I had a Dutch maiden name, Van Valkenburg. So.
Oh wow! I have my maiden name is Badgewell, and I think it does not get more English than that. Which strangely, people had a lot of trouble with. I was like, it's not fundamentally any harder than Doghouse, but
it's a compound word, right? Two words joined together,
right?
I mean, obviously, you're a comedian.
Yeah, I'm a comedian. I have been doing like entertainment adjacent stuff probably my whole life. I grew up in Orlando, Florida, and in Orlando, my dad worked as an actor and a singer and a casting agent and did all kinds of entertainment stuff. And I was just kind of hanging out on set sometimes, or, you know, for a lot of years he did dinner theater at Fort Wilderness at Disney World. So for several years, he played Marshall Matt Dillon in the dinner theater show there. And so that I kind of grew up there. And
wow.
It's fun because I actually do mystery dinner theater now as a grown up. So
yeah, I can see your dad being Matt Dillon. He's a pretty cool dude. I'm glad I got to meet him. He's really real cool guy.
Yeah, he's fun. But yeah, I think just being around that growing up was impactful. And it probably doesn't hurt that my parents did put me in acting school when I was like 10 years old. And I think part of that was because I was painfully shy. And nobody would know that about me now, I don't think. But at the time, I think they were like, oh, she's weird. We should do something about it.
Yeah. I think that's interesting because I'm also very shy, and I also think people don't realize that. But even now, I'm, you know, I don't know about you, but I still have some like anxiety and stuff just from being shy.
Oh, yeah. I'm riddled with anxiety. I just am not shy about it anymore, I guess.
Yeah. You can put on a face. I mean, you can pretend like you're not.
Right.
I guess. But it's funny how many people I think in comedy are not really socially outward. They're, you know, they're shy.
If you think about it, it's, you know, there are a lot of people do comedy for a lot of different reasons, I would say, or they start for different reasons. And they tend to fall into like two categories. One is because they are a creative soul. They're just an artist. They're a person that has to do creative undertakings, no matter whether it's, you know, painting or singing or dancing or whatever it is. And then there's people who do it because I think they're probably just egomaniacs. to be honest. I'm not saying that there's not a touch of egomaniacal elements to the personality of anybody who starts it for more legitimate reasons, but
yes. Yeah, I think I see your point. Some people need a lot of attention and some people don't want the attention, which right. is weird. It's kind of counterintuitive when you think about going on stage, but you don't really want attention.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that fall into that category.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's the difference in artistry between people that get up on stage and don't really have anything to say. They don't have anything to talk about. They don't have a unique point of view. I think one of the things that I gripe most vocally about is like open mic culture, where it's a lot of young guys and they're learning and they're new and they're getting out there and they're doing it, but it kind of turns into a little bit of an echo chamber where if it's like you've got everybody at the show has the same point of view, then what's fun about that? That's just not that interesting.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It takes a time. It takes a time for you to find your voice. I've heard sometimes 10 years before you really figure out what it is you want to talk about. So, you know, when you're just starting out, I guess you get to give them a little grace. They're navigating. So they'll move on from the standard jokes that all
the great hope. Some of them do, some of them don't.
Yeah, it's true. But you know what? As long as they're getting what they want out of it, then it's cool. Let's move on to our next segment, which I like to call your first.
Okay.
And so I love to hear about people's first house and their first comedy show. You can start in any order you like.
Okay. So as you know, my husband and I, we've owned many homes over the course of our marriage. And our first one was technically his house, but we became married while we were living there. And it was a little tiny, I think like a post-war cottage in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, in a little old neighborhood that at one point in history was just young families. And then over the years, you know, people aged out and then the college campus there got a lot bigger. So a lot of it turned into campus housing. But at the time when we lived there, it was still mostly the old neighborhood folks that were still living there.
The circa of the neighborhood?
So I would say that house was probably built in the 40s.
Okay.
I don't know for sure. I don't really remember all the details of it, but it was an older home. And to this day, Eric says like, when he has nightmares about that house. It's the thing of like, oh God, what's going to break next on this thing? What are we going to have to do? Like, we're going to have to dig up the backyard to deal with the plumbing. We're going to have to replace the roof. We got to get a new AC unit. Like it's just, you know, with an old house, it's always something.
Right.
That is
so not the fondest of memories in that house, it sounds like.
Yeah. But it was a great first house. He bought it from his grandmother for, you know, not a lot of money. Wow. And, but yeah, it was a great place for us to dwell. And I like to say that I turned it into a home.
Yeah.
Because before I moved in, he was living there with his cousin and it was gross. So
too much like bachelor pad.
It was very bachelor pad. Like the man did not have furniture before I got to him. It was just a bed and a big old Tupperware bin that he was using as a hamper. So
that's sad. That's just sad.
It was. He was like, I don't really like this house. And I walked in there. I was like, yeah, why would you? It's like,
right?
Institutional, how little you have in here. Yeah. Sometimes you need a woman's touch.
Yeah. It always helps. It always helps. Unless you're lucky in one of those. I don't know. I'm not a very good designer. My house, because I raised all boys. So it's not bachelor pad, but it's maybe bachelor pad-esque. Even though they moved out, it's like you get into that rut.
More on being sanitary than being decorative.
Exactly. Well, and indestructible, you know?
Yeah. Durability accounts for
what can they not break?
Yeah. So that was our first house and it was just a darling little thing. But now that we have lived in bigger houses and went, you know, we like got big houses for a minute there and now we have since scaled back down.
Yeah.
And are living in the same size floor plan that we were when we first started. But we love it. Yeah. We don't need that much space. And I think that's the big takeaway after a lot of years of owning homes is that we just don't need all of that.
Right.
It's a lot. you know.
Because you end up just collecting a bunch of stuff that you're like, why do I have all this stuff?
Yeah, so. Yeah. Oh, yeah. At the end of us moving away from the biggest house that we lived in, we had to downsize considerably. And I gave away like an entire like gym's worth of gym equipment. And Eric gave away like an entire like landscaping units worth of yard tools and mowers and stuff like
that. Wow.
Yeah. But it's like, what are you going to do? You can't drag it around the world with you. I mean, you don't need a lawnmower in Arizona. So
not always. So the house that you were in Estrella Mountain Ranch, that was already a downsized.
Yeah. That was about half the size of the house that we came from.
Wow.
And the reason why we had such a big house prior to that was because we bought it right after that fun little real estate bubble burst.
We
picked it up as a foreclosure in 2008, 2009, something like that. So, I mean, we bought this giant house for not a lot of money. And, you know, I'm sure we were like the first wave of riffraff in the neighborhood, but
people giving you the side eye. Hey,
because we made friends with all of our other cool neighbors, and this was like a golf cart neighborhood where everybody had golf carts. So we would just party on the golf carts, like in the neighborhood, just like, cause it was only one way in, one way out. It was no traffic. So it was just our own little like giant cul-de-sac in the woods kind of thing. But yeah, we had a blast living out there.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah. Yeah. But what was heating and cooling, all of that worth it was, you know, carrying all that stuff from house to house. I don't know. Maybe it is. That's just what you do in life, I guess.
But I mean, maybe you do it so that you can appreciate the smaller house again. Like, I don't know. Everyone dreams of it. You dream of having the big house, the big yard, and then you get it and you're like, oh, this is a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. That's what it is. It's a lot of work. And nobody tells you about those pitfalls of home ownership. You know, it might be different now, but when Eric and I were growing up, it was like still very much the like Reagan era American dream. You want to be a homeowner, a small business owner, nuclear family, all of those things. So it was just kind of a given that we would be homeowners. It was like, yeah, of course you're going to be a homeowner. Why wouldn't you?
You know,
that's what employed people do. They buy homes. And so we did. We bought a bunch of them, and we had a vacation place at the beach for a little while. And that was awesome too. So I will say that getting into home ownership was an overall good thing for us, because we ended up making money over the years by doing nothing more than just signing our name on paper, you know, and just waiting for the market to do its thing.
Right.
And we made out pretty well when I know some others didn't, but we also don't have kids. So that's a big part of our ability to kind of come and go and make those moves, because we don't have the anxiety that a young family would have, where we have to think about our school system and, you know, all of those kind of considerations. We're just too freewheeling folks. And if we find somewhere we want to move, we move there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. But it is a good point you raised. The home ownership is a great way for just the average Joe to build wealth. And that's one thing I'm concerned about, is I feel like it's going to be harder going down, you know, in future generations for that to happen.
Yeah, it will be. Because if you're harking back to the beginning of the tale, remember, my husband bought that first house from his grandmother. For a very, very below market price. And without that kind of, you know, generational generosity that a lot of people are not going to have to rely on, it'll be harder to get started. It wouldn't be impossible, but we definitely were fortunate.
Yeah.
Because we had that gift up front.
For sure. Mm-hmm. All right. First comedy show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My first comedy show would have been my graduation showcase for the stand-up comedy class that I took when I started at the Stardome in Birmingham in 2018, I think, maybe 2017. I can't remember when I started the classes, but yeah, so my first stand-up comedy engagement was at the little side room called the Broadway Room at the Stardome. And It was just a little open mic show, but I felt like I did pretty well. I was well prepared, you know, I took it seriously. And yeah, it was great. And it was a really interesting place to start a comedy path, because that's not really a comedy city, Birmingham. They have a comedy club, but that is the entire presence of comedy in that city. There is no real scene there.
It's not like the Alabama hotspot of comedy.
No. Although, strangely, you know, the only other stand-up live, we have a stand-up live here in downtown Phoenix. The only other one is located in Huntsville, Alabama.
Wow. Interesting.
I don't know why, but yeah, I went to it when it first opened. It was in a repurposed Chinese restaurant. So it was still very Chinese restaurant on the outside when I went there. Improve the surrounds there. But Huntsville is one of those strange places where, like, I know Alabama has like the worst social cultural reputation in the nation, but Huntsville, people forget NASA is in Huntsville and Redstone Arsenal is in Huntsville. So there is a lot of armory and industrial and aerospace tech that's centered right there. So it's like you just have this bizarre population of geniuses in the middle of Huntsville. Strange place.
Right.
But I imagine that's why the comedy club is able to thrive there, is because there is actually a pocket of people that, you know,
they're looking for something.
Yeah. Like the intellectual liberal arts.
Yes. Yeah. They like to laugh. Mm-hmm. So even though you started back when you were 10, getting all geared up for this career of yours in performance arts, you didn't actually get into comedy until fairly recently.
Right. Yeah. I mean, not in any kind of like official capacity. I always did, you know, drama and stuff when I was in high school. And then even after high school, I still maintained like a volunteer position in local community theater, although I did a lot of behind the scenes stuff at that point. Because theater is a very time consuming undertaking. To be in a production requires a lot more of someone than who is just doing tech on a production, because you have to be there for the full run of the rehearsal, even if you're a nobody. I mean, that's just the culture of theater, is everybody's there at the beginning and everybody's there at the end. And I kind of bring that sensibility into comedy with me, which is why I'm probably a little more stiff or maybe old-fashioned about the etiquette when you come into a performance space, because it does bother me when people come in late and then leave early if they're on a show. Mm. But that's the difference between stand-up and theater, or even improv, which is more team sport oriented.
Yeah.
People tend to take liberties with coming in and going out. And I have always kind of had a sensibility that if we're on a show, we are all operating in service of the entire production,
mm-hmm.
which starts before people come in the door and ends.
I think if you get a chance to produce a show, then you learn about all that stuff, because it is very nerve wracking when it's 5 minutes before it's supposed to start and you're like, where are they? And mm-hmm. then, yeah, you should hang out and support your fellow comedians.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can't always do that. I mean, we can't mm-hmm. all do everything. We all have lives, but there's a decorum, and I can tell people that, you know, there have been people that are apologetic when they have to leave early. I tend to be one of those people, because I don't like to do it, but you know, sometimes you got to get on to the next
sometimes
thing.
You do. Yeah. Sometimes you have to. But I think that you get more out of it if you put more into it, you know, and that includes the support and the being there and the camaraderie.
Yeah, well, and there's a lot of networking and a sense of community that comes with that kind of thing. And I can't count how many times I've been booked just because I was hanging out and just struck up a conversation with somebody. I mean, that's often how stuff like that happens.
Right.
In stand up. So it definitely behooves anybody to be engaged in the overall production. Don't just show up for your stuff and then leave, you know?
Yeah. You'll definitely get more out of it. Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of, let's move on to your favorite rooms. Now, I know that your place now, I don't know, do you have a favorite room in your place now?
I don't know that I have a favorite room. This is we live in an apartment now, so it's relatively small, but I think my favorite thing, it's in this hand, but I would be a bad weather lady. Okay. This wall right here was one of my requirements for anywhere we live. I have to have a gallery wall. I got very spoiled at my old house because we had cathedral ceilings and I had these big walls that I had to cover. And I had a massive collection of paintings and artwork that I had just like picked up at thrift stores or at, you know, secondhand shops on vacations, going antiquing, stuff like that. So I had just collected a lot and I had a lot to cover the walls with. So I did. And I just loved having my little collections all over the place. But like I said, we did have to downsize. So I had to pare down to my favorite things. But what you see on the wall behind me are all of my favorite pieces that I've retained. Yes. And many of them have stories. I'll take you on a quick
look. Yes, let's check out some of them.
All right, let's see. Here we go. All right. So, and I can tell you where I got a lot of these. Most of them were thrift stores and stuff. But you'll see a lot of them are kind of like landscapey.
Yes.
This one behind me, that right there, that's the Colosseum. We actually got that in Rome. And I would also have a painting of the Vestal, whatever building things that were down there, but we left it in the cab in Italy. So,
oh no.
So some nice patron in Rome got a free
an amazing souvenir.
Yeah. Wow. The other things, this is my cow behind me. She doesn't really have a name. She's just pretty moo cow. But that was one of the first paintings that Eric bought me when we moved to Birmingham. There was like a little secondhand shop there and a lady was selling that painting for way too cheap. She had no idea what it was worth. So I have it now. But yeah, so all of these paintings, and they're just things that I've gotten on trips or things that people have given to me. This mirror behind me, cool sparkling baby sham. Means nothing. I just thought it was cool. So
it's cool. Yeah, it's very cool. That's so fun.
That's my favorite room in my house, is just wherever my gallery wall is.
You know, I think that's interesting because when you get right down to it, the stuff doesn't really matter, but all of those things are all related to memories. Yeah. You know, that's all like memories for you, experiences that you've had. That's what it's all about. So I think that's super cool. Yeah.
And I'm not the only one that does this while I'm taking you through a tour of all my junk. Look at this. I got that typeset tray for like $7 at an antique shop somewhere in Indiana, I think. And then over the years, Eric and I have just filled it up with all of our little tchotchkes and nonsense.
Oh,
and yeah, just like, you know how like boys like to pick up rocks?
Yes.
That's my husband is that boy. This thing is full of rocks, all kinds of rocks and stuff. Kristen, this is the truest fact. I did not know that my husband collected rocks for like the first 10 years of our marriage. I've been married to this man for I just always would find rocks like on the counter or something. And I would be like, okay, there, I guess. And he was picking them up intentionally because he just thought it was a neat rock.
Oh, well, you know, there's worse things, I guess.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I don't begrudge any happiness for it. But for me, with the untrained rocker at the time, I was like, I don't understand why you want to carry around a pocket of pea gravel every day. It just doesn't
exactly make sense. I would be the same. I don't know. I don't have a good appreciation for minerals is what it comes down to.
My appreciation has grown, but I certainly didn't get it at first. So.
Yes. Well, that's good. That's good that you guys have come together on this. Yeah. All right. Favorite room to perform in?
Ooh, wow. That's a good question.
Maybe more than one answer.
Let me think. I think it doesn't really have to do with where the room is. It's about the chemistry in the room amongst the audience and the performers who are there. So the best times that I've had, because, you know, I've performed multiple times in the same room, and I'll have a bad set in that room or I'll have a good set in that room. But the times when I have a good set, there's usually like the common denominator is the people that I am in the room with. So to give you a non-answer, my favorite room to do comedy in is the room where all the people who are having fun are in.
Oh, that's a very good non-answer. Can you think of one or two shows where it really clicked?
Ooh.
It really popped out. Like, wow, that was a really great experience.
Yeah, actually, Jason Santiago, he does a show at House of Comedy called Pick Your Punch. And it's a thing where you go up to perform, but everybody submits random punchlines and you have to pepper them into your set as part of the game. Like whoever does the most punchlines or does the best job or whatever gets to headline the next show. And I did that one and I had so much fun that I couldn't stop doing the game part. When it came time to do my headlining set, I went back and headlined and I was still playing the game. I just wrote down the suggestions from everybody else and then just kept playing because it was so much fun. I mean, it was literally, it was just having fun for me. I thought that was amazing. And on that note, I will say Lou Moon's Act Out, which is at the Bridge Improv Theater in Mesa, I think it is. That's another one. It's like a combo stand-up and improv. So it's like two, like a stand-up will do their 10 minutes or so. And then the improv team will do like 10 minutes of scenes on the previous stand-up thing. So it was just so much fun, not only as a performer to watch the improv team pull bits out of your set to like do the improv scene, but it was also way more engaging as an audience member when you know, like makes you listen a little bit harder because you're like, oh, okay, they're going to use stuff from this to like play into the next thing. And I want to be able to understand what's going on. So for that reason, it was an incredible show. The energy was awesome. The creative spirit of the whole thing was great.
That sounds like such a fun idea.
Yeah, it really is. It was so cool. I love any kind of mashup of improv and stand-up. It's always like the best comedians can do both.
Are they still doing that show? The Act Out show?
Lou Moon does his once a month, I believe.
Wow.
And then I can't remember what I said the other one was. I don't know. I think that might have been a one-off. But
The Pick Your Punch.
Oh, no. Yeah, Pick Your Punch. Yeah, that's an ongoing one. So, yeah, Jason's show at House of Comedy, I believe that's once a month or so. Oh, Izzy just came out.
That's the frustrating thing is there's so many cool shows all around
that no one ever knows
about.
I just wrote on Facebook the other day that one of the hardest things about doing comedy here is that there is always something going on, like a quality show going on. And I've got so many friends, and I know you do too, that was like, I wish I could have a clone so I could go to all of them and support all of them because I just love what everybody's doing. But, you know, we only have so many hours in the day.
It's so annoying.
Yeah.
There's only one of us. So annoying. Well, that's cool. Yeah. I do wish there was a way that people, especially like people who aren't in the comedy community, like audience members who just want to see comedy could know about more of these types of shows because anybody that I know who I've turned on to local comedy, they love it. Compared to the big, you know, where you pay big dollars and you go to an arena or something like that, they tend to say this is so much more fun.
It is. I mean, people don't understand, like live music, live anything, live theater, just being in a room where people are doing live performance. There, it's an indescribable energy and a chemistry amongst the people in the room that can't ever be replicated or repeated. And that is what makes it special. It's this fleeting, elusive thing. It's we're making sandcastles every time we do a show. It's like, you know, this is going to last forever. Let's just enjoy it while it's here.
That's such a great analogy for it because it does. It's gone. Once the show's over, it's gone. Mm-hmm. You know, even if somebody takes a recording, maybe puts it out on the socials, it's not the same at all.
No,
it's
not at all. I find it hard to watch my own videos, not just because I was already there and I already know what I said, but and also the thing of like, I hate watching myself, but it's not the same. I'm like, this does not feel the same as I felt when I delivered it and when I heard all of the laughter in the room, you know?
It's yeah, that's the thing, that energy that's there. Yeah. Yeah, it's cool stuff. All right, we're going to move on to our next segment, which is the real estate rundown.
All right.
Now, I don't know if I'm just curious because now you're not in the home owner game. Like you're, right. You're just divorced from that whole thing.
Yep.
Do you even care? Do you even like listen to any real estate news? Like, do you have any clue? Like if I said, what do you think the interest rates are right now? Would you even have a guess?
I would not have a guess. Now Eric, on the other hand, that's kind of his wheelhouse. He's the one that pays attention to those details. When you say pay attention to the market, that's so funny because when you say that, you're talking about like interest rates and financial things. And I'm talking about like, oh, that cute house on the corner's for sale. I want to go look at it. Because I just want to be nosy and look at people's houses. That's my idea of the market, keeping up with it.
Yeah. So what's your take? What's your take on the whole thing?
I mean,
where are the cute houses?
Yeah. Well, the cute houses are in downtown Phoenix, like the historic Roosevelt Row, that historic Willow neighborhood. Like my dad and I, we went and just for funsies looked at a house over there that was for lease. It was the cutest stinking thing. The thing was built probably in the mid 20s. The doorbell, when you open the door, you could turn it and it made a noise like a bicycle, like ring, ring.
Oh, wow.
It had the little like window that you open instead of a peephole. It was like its own little,
the little speakeasy thing.
Yeah. All of the little architectural details in those old houses, like a little place for your telephone to sit, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was so charming. And that's the kind of house, like if we ever did move in to an old house again, it would have to be one of those that just was just had so much charm and history and architectural detail that you just couldn't resist it. Otherwise just to move into like, you know, an old box cutter bungalow or whatever, all I could focus on would be like how much dust is in the corner that won't ever come up.
Right. Your basic 70s ranch.
Yeah.
Avocado green, which I don't know. If you ever find one of those 70 houses, 100% preserved, they're actually kind of cool too. When you walk into the kitchen and it looks like it's from the Brady Bunch or something.
Yeah. Even but it has to be cool. Preserved. It has to be pristine still. Yeah. We don't want that worn in look. Be like,
But not like no one's ever cared about this house and it's just sad. And
yeah.
That's not the same. I feel like my house is in between that. There's like so many projects. That's the thing. A house is just work. So
it's a never ending to-do list. It's maddening if you don't like to do things. Like I want to be a person who can do gardening and nurture plants and stuff like that. But I've been at this for 42, almost 43 years. I don't have a green thumb. It just ain't for me. And
accepting that fact about yourself.
Right. Right. So it's like, I don't have to worry about landscaping anymore. I don't have to worry about if the sprinkler system has sprung a leak again. I don't have to worry about replacing the tree that got blown down in the last monsoon because the HOA says we have to have a tree in the yard.
Right.
I don't have to deal with any of that. So that's nice. I quite enjoy that. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I think that, and I think that going forward, there's going to be more of these homes, whether you rent or buy, that are going to be like the higher density. So either townhomes or condos. I've lived here long enough to see the changing of the downtown areas. I mean, most of them used to be places where you just make sure your doors are locked when you drive through. They were really scary, but now they're becoming like the downtown Phoenix area. That used to be nothing. And now it's pretty vibrant. Maybe not the best downtown you're ever going to come across, but it's getting there.
It's fun. I mean, it's definitely been gentrified. So, but it's still a downtown area. As you know, I live in the Roosevelt Row Arts District. I love it. It is just a joy to walk around and see murals and street art. And you know, a lot of independent restaurants and stuff, because I've gotten to where I've like turned my nose up at chain restaurants, but, you know, and breweries and just a lot of like sidewalk cafe culture, I would call it. Walking around is just really fun in the burbs. You have to be very intentional about if you want to walk somewhere, because you're far away from everything. But here it's nice. You can just walk outside, walk around the block. I'm sick of walking around the block. Okay, I'm going home now.
Right. Yeah, exactly. You have to drive somewhere. If you live in like Gilbert, you have to go drive somewhere to walk around. It's not quite the same experience as walking out your front door. I'm curious if you find that you're meeting people in the community. Like, does it feel like it's an actual community there?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, because we are on foot a lot, we go places that are within walking distance. And since we're there a lot, we have befriended the staff. We're regulars over at Pedal House. So they just bring us our drinks. They don't even ask us before they say hi. So that's like really, really fun, you know, for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then there's people that we just see who live around here, and we see them on the street and we say hi. And, you know, I, of course, have the dog. And so walking the dogs, we have dog friends who we see out there and, you know, ones that Izzy likes to say hello to and all that good stuff. But yeah, I do feel a sense of community down here. It's really, really nice.
Mm-hmm. I think people are really looking for that these days. You know, people want to feel like they belong to a community.
Well, yeah. And what I was going to ask you, since we were talking about real estate rundown, and Estrella, like I noticed one of the things that I had never seen before I moved there were the, what are they called? Next gen homes.
Oh yeah.
The multi-generational living arrangements where you essentially have one house, but there's a wing of it that is locked off privately, something akin to like a mother-in-law suite or something like that. But it's designed with the intention of like, if you have elderly parents who need to come live with you, or if you have grown children who maybe have special needs or are in transition and don't have housing or whatever, then that's a place for them to land. I'm curious to know from you as a realtor, like what, how popular are those? And do you see
very
that
popular?
Popular?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Like with rising rates, how attainable is home ownership for the average bear anymore? I don't know. I mean, I got started early, so I already was over the hump, but is that a realistic prospect for people who are maybe in their 20s right now? Are they going to have enough money to buy a home, or is multi-generational living going to be their reality?
I think it's a little bit of each. I think the multi-generational is becoming, it used to be nobody had that. Nobody's mom lived with them. You know, it just wasn't the way our culture is. Right. But now you're seeing that more combined households because it is so expensive. So those kind of properties, those next gens, I think are genius. And there's one builder in particular who kind of sort of championed those, but now other builders are kind of following suit with a similar setup because it's not the same as having like a mother-in-law suite where it's all together. Right. Those next gens are actually a separate, like you can lock that door. They have their own garage.
Sometimes they even have
their own little backyard. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a really great setup. And so you can use it for multi-gen, or people rent them out too. You know, that's the other thing to help get a little income to help make that payment.
Yeah.
So I think that's one way. And I think the other is people who are just starting out with their first home, you know, and it's probably from just the social media Kardashian sort of mentality where you want to have this Pinterest house right out of the gate.
Yeah.
But it's hard because they're expensive. So if you can say, well, I just want to get like a little townhome or a little fixer-upper house and put some equity in there and, you know, work up the ladder like most people do, then you can still do it, you know, but you might not get your perfect house right out of the gate, but
yeah, I don't know anybody that gets a perfect house out of a starter home. Exactly. I will say this, anybody out there that's watching, if you want to get a starter home and you want to make the most of it, learn how to do some things in the DIY realm, how to fix your own stuff, because that you will pay out the nose to have a tradesman or, you know, any other kind of like finishing professional come in and do that kind of work. Because most people don't know how to do it. And it's not hard. Exactly. It is stuff that people can do themselves. I mean, if you have the fortitude to sit there and watch a YouTube video, you can figure it out. You can do it on
exactly.
your own and save a ton of
money. It
makes
a huge difference.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. But the counter to that is everyone's working like 2-3 jobs. So yeah. you don't have time, and it's, you got to find that balance somewhere in there.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And just work all the time too. So,
yeah.
Well, this one's really fun. I really like this.
Me
what
too.
What is coming up for you? What do you got coming up in the future here?
Oh, wow. Let's see. You know, I do our Crack Ups workshops for aspiring stand-up comedians at all skill levels every Monday night in downtown.
I miss it too. I will be back.
Yes.
I have my punch card. I still have.
Yeah, stuff. Yeah. Don't throw that away.
I just got busy, so I'll be back.
Yeah, yeah. I getcha. In addition to that, I've been hosting game shows at Game Show Battle Rooms in Chandler, which is fun. And it's a thing most people have not heard of. It's like the new experience room. It's not an escape room. It's not axe throwing. It's game shows. We're doing game shows now. Yeah. And it's a ton of fun. It really is. And then, of course, I always have stand-up stuff going on. Of course, I'm drawing a blank on when my next performance is. Tonight, I'll be with Mystery Mansion Dinner Theater.
Oh, you're still doing the dinner theater?
Yeah.
Where is that at? Where's
that?
That
one, that'll be at Maggiano's in Scottsdale.
Oh, okay.
It's not always at Maggiano's, but it's typically there.
Maggiano's. Mm-hmm. So are you part of a troupe that goes to different restaurants, mm-hmm. or is it always the same venue?
Yeah. So Mystery Mansion, they're what you call a pipe and drape company. So in the, you know, like old tradition of troubadours taking their stuff around with them and setting up camp and then doing a pop-up show, that's what they do. So
cool.
Maggiano's is a venue where they do that a lot. They also do it at Babbo in Scottsdale. And we've done one at, Talking Stick Resort, which that one was nice. The catering
yeah.
was
Ooh,
pretty
nice.
Good on that
yeah.
one. But yeah.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again for being
yeah.
on the show. It's good to
thanks
catch up
for
with
having
you.
Me.
I love to catch up in person too, but hey, if
yeah.
this is what we got to do, this is what we got to do.
Hey, I'll take it. I'll take any kind of Kristen I can get.
Same here. A little Saskia is always makes the day a little bit brighter. So. Look for Saskia at Crack Ups Comedy Night, Game Show Battle Rooms, the Mystery Mansion Dinner Theater, and be sure to follow her on the socials. See you next time at AZ Laughs and Listings.